When it comes to your finances, go for the credit card that's always there for you. With 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, that means no more waiting for, quote, normal business hours just to get a hold of someone. Real service from real people whenever you need it. Get the customer service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard. This episode is brought to you by Progressive, where drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. Plus, auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Quote now at progressive.com to see if you could save. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates, national average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary, discounts not available in all states and situations.
Welcome to Star Talk, your place in the universe where science and pop culture collide. Star Talk begins right now. Welcome to Star Talk Radio. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. I'm an astrophysicist and director of New York City's Hayden Planetarium at the American Museum of Natural History. The following show is the second part of a live show we recorded on February 24th, 2014, at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, known to locals as BAM. In addition to my co-host, comedian Eugene Merman, we were joined on stage that night by neuroscientist Heather Berlin, Bill Nye, the science guy, comedian Michael Ian Black, the actor Paul Rudd, and star of the hit TV show The Big Bang Theory, Mayim Bialik. NASA did a study on neuroplasticity, your brain in space. Okay, told you I'd bring it back to space. All right. So in space, you are in zero G, and so in zero G, your sense of balance, which requires your body's awareness of gravity, other things, your vision, your sense of day and night, because in space, if you're orbiting Earth, the sun rises and sets every 45 minutes. So this could totally mess with your rhythms. And they did a study, and they found out that the brain has plasticity to it, where in fact you will completely adapt to those changed conditions. Not only that, the brain builds new brain cells, and in some cases permanently responds to this environment. And so because of the permanence of some of this plasticity, they were suggesting that you should not bring kids into space because they don't know what a permanent change in a kid would be like as an adult.
What is it like in an adult? What happens in this? What
you
is the permanent
crazy.
Plasticity?
Yeah.
What's the result of this neuroplasticity?
Well, I know people have their eyes change shape, right?
Like vision squares? Problems. Like they become a square?
that sounds kind of cool.
When you have the hard-boiled eggs and you compress them. And
which part of the eye? I need you to be more specific. Yeah. Like the whole eye?
Guys who go into space with fighter pilot eyes come back and they don't have very good close-up or distance.
Okay.
They need glasses when they get back.
I'd be careful, though, when you say permanent changes, because if you're talking about neuroplasticity, if it could change one way, it could also change back another way. But I think the reason why not to bring developing brains into space or children is because they're critical periods of development. And if they miss certain stimuli during that critical period, then there could be
problems. And you're talking about circadian rhythms, correct?
Among other things, yeah.
So talking about our awareness of day and night, you're saying those things can reset so that you have a normal body period that is shorter than what it is if you are on Earth.
Well, it really disrupts your sleep cycling.
Sure.
And you don't get as deep a REM sleep in
right,
space.
Right, so all
as you
of
do.
That developmentally would be really, really a bad idea.
Not to mention, like, my kids are a pain in the ass on just like an hour and a half flight. Could you imagine sending them to Mars?
I think you sort of can imagine.
So. I hope it would be like JetBlue, where you at least get some television or something on the back of the seat.
So here's what I wonder, Heather. If there's this neuroplasticity, where your body can adapt to stress in the ways that we're measured in space, why don't we adapt more on Earth? Why do people stress out and end up in mental hospitals? How much?
Wait, those are two very different questions. Those
are two. I thought he was going to ask about working a night shift.
Exactly.
No, no, why are they two different questions? If your brain can adapt with all this plasticity that the neuroscientists are boasting of, mm-hmm. then why do we have people just freaking out here on Earth?
Well, okay, they're two separate things.
Tell me why.
Well, this is one thing. I went around and actually met people who had extraordinary abilities way outside the norm of what we think is possible. Extraordinary memory and a tolerance to the pain.
You hosted a TV show on
there was a Discovery Channel show called Superhuman Showdown, and we went around the world to find people with these extraordinary abilities. One person could hold his breath underwater for 22 minutes.
And not be dead.
And not be dead, and he could actually...
Yeah. Okay, just checking. Yeah.
Could he talk to fish even just a little?
But it's amazing how far we can actually push ourselves, our physiology and our brains. So I think a lot of what people stress about is they think they can't adapt, but really we can adapt well beyond what we think we're capable of doing. Why people are in mental institutions is another question. There's a lot of different reasons why people go insane, so to speak, but I don't think it's because of lack of neural plasticity. Does that make
sense? I support
sense?
That completely.
Is it because of heavy metal music?
That beat.
As I was saying, you can modify the brain within certain biological constraints. So if you're born with a certain predisposition or you're just structural differences in the brain, you can only push it so far. But we can definitely go far beyond what we think we can go.
So if we see someone else who has ability, then can we all try to have that ability?
And so these superhuman people who I met, they all practiced a lot of hours dedicated to it, but they also had certain, like the guy who could hold his breath underwater had a greater lung capacity in general. He started out with that, and then he pushed it further and further. So I think we can all go further within our particular
range.
There is
this book, The Sports Gene, that talks about the exceptional athletic ability that we don't really think about when we see Olympic athletes. They're at a whole different physiological level. We would think, oh, Michael Phelps is a great swimmer. No, like his arms are really, really long. His feet are practically webbed, like... His body is different than ours. He's really
a monster.
No, it is weird when you watch swimmers at that high level. They go about twice as fast as a normal
Their bodies
person.
Are, I could swim all day. I'll never look like that because I was not born with the genetic predisposition to have really long arms and web feet.
I think you look great. That's really what matters. I have a question, but on a some more pedestrian level, talking about sports, you see certain populations, like people from the Dominican Republic, which is such a small country, but have a large portion of people entering the major leagues of baseball. Is it because they have peers?
This is such
groups?
A dangerous question we know you're about to ask. It's so dangerous.
I was not going into racism, although I will if you want me to. No, it was about something somebody else asked about observing other people in peer groups ascending to higher levels and therefore seeing firsthand what's possible. Does that make you more susceptible to those possibilities?
I think that's a huge sociological, environmental, behavioral influence, but I don't know.
I know, I'm writing my dissertation on
it. Sorry. Have they found a gene for baseball? That's really what we're asking, right?
You're born with certain genetic predispositions towards, maybe better athletic prowess, but it gets dangerous.
Different distribution of muscle fibers, for example, in runners.
The thing we're dancing around is it can be very controversial. There was a book written called The Bell Curve about intelligence, and it said we did this whole study and looked at populations, and X number of people from a certain type of background have the highest IQ and others don't, and it really can lead to...
Ashkenazi Jews.
It was happened to be Ashkenazi Jews, yes. But it was...
Who have the highest IQ?
Yeah.
Wait, me too, me too.
That's right. Yeah.
Yes, you guys. Another factor, as a baseball fan, another very strong motivator in those countries is you can play baseball all year. I was just in Minneapolis this morning. Very challenging. That's because the snow is white, the ball is white. And then you
now
also have
being
this...
racist. Yeah.
You also have this extraordinary motivation of money. You can make it in the big leagues. And have you ever seen the World Baseball Classic?
Yeah. It's so mostly Latin America.
Extraordinary players.
Yeah.
But it's one more click to hit it.
I'd like to change the topic.
Yeah, well, go on.
To ice
hockey? Let's talk about eugenics for a moment.
Heather, I want to talk about sleep for a moment. Why the hell do we have to sleep? So what a waste of time that is, I think.
Did you just say, why the hell do we have to sleep?
Yes!
We could be literally learning karate instead.
No, I'm just saying.
Every time I sleep, I'm like, I should be learning karate.
I'm reading, I'm learning, I'm having fun. I say, damn, I gotta go sleep, be semi-comatose for the next 8 hours. If an alien came to Earth, and you're having a great conversation with them, say, excuse me, I have to lay semi-comatose for the next 8 hours. I'll get back to you. They wonder, what's wrong with you?
Maybe they go down 16. You don't know.
No, I know. Yeah, maybe. So,
like a baby.
Well, it's why do we sleep?
The latest theory that most of the neuroscientific evidence is pointing towards is the way of the brain to sort of clean itself out. So during the day, you're taking in all this stimulation, and it's almost impossible for your brain to kind of integrate all of it every day. It would be cluttered. So at night, what happens is there's sort of a pruning. It solidifies the information that it wants to keep.
Whether or not it's accurate or correct or anything.
Without this cleaning out process, they looked at people when you deprive them of sleep, and it causes all sorts of problems, including it can relate to things like Alzheimer's, because the plaques and tangles that form, actually, that sleep is a kind of a way that helps clear out those plaques and, well, things that could potentially form the proteins.
So you're saying people who don't get as much sleep
I knew you were going to say that.
To be clear, she's saying people with Alzheimer's are simply extremely sleepy.
What conclusion are we to draw?
If you're sleepy, you're going to get Alzheimer's. No.
That's how science works.
So remember, play baseball.
All right, so.
Well, like for memories, for example, like if you're studying for an exam, actually, you'll do better if you get a good night's sleep. It's not good to just cram the whole night before, because the brain can then solidify the kind of associations that were made and get rid of the nonsense and the noise.
All right, so but some people sleep 5 hours, others nine. Should the five-hour person be sleeping more or the nine-hour person be sleeping less?
It's hard to say. I don't think there's an exact number on it. I mean, there's a lot of things out there that say you should get X number of hours of sleep, but really everybody's different. Some people just don't need that much sleep.
I don't get a lot of sleep. My feeling is if in general we are productive, functional, getting the things done that we want to get done, there's going to be some variability there for sure.
Okay, so also if you don't get sleep, that's like a form of torture, right? Your brain goes crazy.
And what happens is people start to hallucinate. Yeah. They start to sort of, because again, the brain isn't able to properly prune out and all the information can get kind of jumbled and people...
Also, if you disrupt REM sleep.
Exactly.
But it is...
REM sleep is where a lot of that happens.
It is an individual thing, because you have people like Edison or Winston Churchill or, these high-functioning people who slept for 4 hours a night or 2 hours a night.
There's actually a large number of people, like that. Bill Clinton is another one, Margaret Thatcher. They would only sleep a very few hours, but then they would take these power naps during the day. And there could be something to that, but they all said they take those little mini naps, and that maybe the brain can sort of revamp itself.
They also have a giant staff and many assistants in chairs.
Are you describing mini naps or hooking up periodically with people throughout the day? Both sound relaxing.
Depends on the people.
So what they found was that the REM sleep was disrupted by astronauts who, in orbit, see sunrise, sunset every 45 minutes. They couldn't get the rhythms going.
Then usually
they could
you
just
have
pull
to...
down the shades, couldn't they?
I would have thought. I would have thought.
Those masks that cover your eyes.
Yeah, I would have thought, you'd think.
Well, it's all coach class. That's the thing.
It doesn't come with a little thing. With a
little pouch.
Tell me they flew the space shuttle coach class. They didn't get the little eye cover.
But studies show that if you deprive people, particularly of REM sleep, that they have to make up for it later on, so that they'll have more hours of REM sleep when you allow them to sleep later.
Okay, so this is a feature of our human species, not a failure of our design.
Yeah, I mean, if there was, if we could design it better without sleep, that'd be great, but so far it's...
But it's all species, right? There's no species that does not need sleep.
I don't know that. I don't know.
Sea jellies? Squid?
Algae.
Fish?
No. There are low metabolic periods, I would say, for all sorts of vertebrates, yes? I mean, at least.
Yeah. And there's always a rest period. There's a rest period. Even if it's not what we call sleep, there is a rest period.
But from an evolutionary standpoint, one could ask, if it's a big advantage to need less sleep, would these people be more successful, become captains of industry, and get extraordinarily wealthy? And
well, there must be something. Well, the answer is there must be something advantageous, i.e., incorporating a tremendous amount of input from the day that can then help you make different kinds of decisions, more complicated decisions, correct?
Yeah.
The next day.
Well, I see. So the digested information has more value to you the day after, as for your survival.
If that were evolutionarily
exactly.
advantageous, okay, that's
I got
why
that.
It
that's
would
a
be
good
retained.
One.
Thank
I,
you.
That's good.
But there's
I like
some
that.
Animal. I think there's maybe it's dolphin. There's some animals that sleep with only half their brain and the other half is alert.
It's dolphins.
Where so they're okay, this part of them is aware for any sort of, let's say, predators coming.
And
the other part is sleeping.
The people who sleep
Navy
with their
seals.
Guns and swords.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Samurai bears.
And is it true like lions sleep 20 hours a day, something like that?
Is that true,
Heather?
I don't know everything about everything.
You're a cognitive neuroscientist. Do lions sleep 20 hours a day?
They do. They sleep for 20 hours a day.
Was that Time Magazine?
No.
You went to the zoo with your kids?
No. I went on safari once, and that's true. And I remember learning that.
Okay.
And by the way, it's
Paul Rudd read it.
The females do all of the hunting, and then the male lions just go in and then eat first, swat away the kids, and then they go back to sleep.
Yeah, it's just sleep.
Yeah.
Sweet.
So any they're called, and if there's a bunch of them, they're called a pride.
Wow.
A pride of lions.
Yeah.
A murder of crows.
A boring of panelists.
Smack.
Ma'am, how much sleep do you get a night?
I'm like a 5 or 6 hour person.
As am I. I'm like 5.5 hours exactly.
Yeah.
And I'll nap something on the weekend, but during the week
Take a Saturday, a Shabbat nap for about 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah. I give my kids a cookie and I say I'll be a much better mother if I can sleep for 20 minutes on this couch with earplugs in. I promise.
And how old are your kids?
5.5 and 8.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Yeah. So when they were much younger, you got no sleep. So.
Honestly, it's amazing to see what it's like with a newborn. I was a breastfeeding mom, and I was up literally every 2 hours for about 4 or 5 years. Literally every 2 hours.
Did you study yourself at that point?
I wrote my thesis while breastfeeding my older one. I literally laying down nursing and typing. I was doing data analysis and writing and editing my thesis with my first son. And it's amazing to sleep again.
And she knows three languages.
Totally impressed.
just get so 5.5. How many hours of sleep are you?
Now I have a 3-month-old. So
yeah, okay, but
and I'm breastfeeding. So it's
this
like,
is her most restful part
this
of the
is,
day.
I'm sleeping right now, actually.
Half your brain, you're
half
a dolphin.
My brain is up, and the other half.
She's a dolphin.
Bill,
I need 7.5.
You're
Furthermore,
7.
I claim I'm skilled at the power nap. I put in the hours.
Okay.
I put in the third of an hour.
Power nap, Paul.
It really varies. I guess probably about 6 or 7. Although it seems now I am falling asleep for that 20-minute power nap. I don't mean right now as we speak, but at about like kind of 5:30, 6 o'clock at night. Generally, if I'm flipping around and I'm watching Pardon the Interruption, I notice that I fall asleep.
All right.
Show on ESPN.
Yeah.
About 14.
Good.
Right around 14, yeah.
Yeah, like 6 to 8.
Yeah, okay. So there are no nines
is that
up
weird?
Here.
No.
I always sleep 5.5 hours. I'm normal. 6.4 hours. I'd say 5 to 8 with a lot of afternoon naps after I type out my weird things.
While breastfeeding.
While breastfeeding. A cat! Not a human.
A dragon.
I breastfeed a really cute dragon.
Okay, oh, by the way, when all this is over, the bar is open, and there's a special drink that we invented just for this program. It's called the Brain Freeze. So you just go up there and ask for the Brain Freeze. We invented it. The drink did not exist before tonight, and it has sort of the color of your brain, of brain matter. But it's really tasty.
It does sound good.
A great
it's
drink.
Really, really cold.
Kahlua, milk, and nails.
When we come back, we'll be talking about the future of neuroscience. What is possible, what isn't? Separate the fact from the fiction. Star Talk Radio at BAM!
This podcast is supported by FedEx. Dear small and medium businesses, no one wants happy customers more than you do. So you need a business partner just like you, like FedEx, who understands your passion for serving your customers because they have the same commitment towards you. That's why FedEx offers you picture proof of delivery, packageless and paperless returns, as well as weekend home delivery to 98% of the US on Saturday and 50% on Sunday. See the FedEx service guide for delivery information. What's more, FedEx Ground is faster to more locations than UPS Ground. Trust FedEx for timely deliveries. See what FedEx can do for your business. Absolutely, positively FedEx.
Whether you're a family vacation traveler, business tripper, or long weekend adventurer, Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. And that's good, because there are a lot of me's. Choice Hotels has over 7,400 locations and 22 brands, including Comfort Hotels, Radisson Hotels, and Cambria Hotels. Get the best value for your money when you book with Choice Hotels. Cambria Hotels feature locally inspired hotel bars with specialty cocktails and downtown locations in the center of it all. Hey, that's me. Radisson Hotels have flexible workspaces to get the most of your business travel and on-site restaurants. That's me, too. And at Comfort Hotels, you'll enjoy free hot breakfast with fresh waffles, great pools for the entire family, and spacious rooms. Hey, that's me, too. I guess I'm just going to have to stay at all of them. Choice Hotels has a stay for any you. Book direct at choicehotels.com, where travel comes true.
Hey, remember when we did that show about the science of the golf swing? Well, let's take that to the next level. And that's because PXG has developed the Black Ops driver so golfers don't have to sacrifice distance for forgiveness. And the science proves it. PXG Black Ops driver is a breakthrough in driver technology. It's a complete and total victory in golf club engineering, unlike anything you've ever seen before. Black Ops drivers are adjustable to deliver a combined MOI of 10,000 plus for unreal forgiveness. Now that's ridiculously high. The higher the MOI, the more forgiving the club will play. So you don't have to square the ball perfectly for it to go straight and get distance. Add PXG's new advanced material face technology, and you get incredible ball speed that pushes the distance to the absolute limits. More forgiveness, more distance, no sacrifices. PXG Black Ops driver. Hit your tee shot straighter and farther. The proof is in the science. Learn more and get free shipping on all equipment. Go to pxg.com/startalk and use code startalk at checkout. That's pxg.com/startalk. Use code startalk for free shipping on all equipment. pxg.com/startalk, code startalk.
We are talking about the science of the brain. I've got it written here that we have 100,000 miles of nerve fibers in each brain. That's extraordinary. That's the hell of a computer, but it still has issues. There's brain failure in some people, right? Mm-hmm. So what is the hope for really disentangling what all this is and perhaps being able to fix people who have problems? You just go in and snip a connection or nip and tuck?
Well, I mean, it's a huge problem, actually, to solve, to understand how the brain works. And you're talking about 100 billion neurons with a quadrillion connections. So to understand the workings of the human brain is one of the greatest mysteries, and we're all working on that very hard. But once we understand how it works, then just like a mechanic has to know how the car works so that when you bring it in, when it's broken, they know how to go about trying to fix it. So knowing the underlying structure is the beginning.
But is it that reductionist? Not to get all philosophical on you, because in physics, you can describe each molecule of air careening off of another one. But that description doesn't give you the bulk properties of it. You need to sort of step back and say, this air has a temperature. The individual particle doesn't have a temperature. We have macroscopic descriptions of things that enable us to function, because you can't describe every single little thing. Do you think the brain will be intractable in that way?
So what you're trying to say is that if we understand everything about the brain, will we understand the mind? Or is that, that's what I think you're saying?
Yeah.
So some people think that the mind or consciousness is an emergent property of the brain.
Right.
And there's...
It just happens.
Well, it emerges out of the workings of it.
If you have enough circuits, you're going to get a mind.
You're going to get this thing called consciousness. There's something called the easy problem of consciousness, which isn't that easy, but we can correlate every single thought with the actual workings of neurons in the brain. And let's say we can map all that out and we can do it. We solve the easy problem. But there's still going to be a hard problem of why is it that those neurons firing and those neurochemicals slushing around cause us to have these subjective experiences. They call it the explanatory gap. We might not be able to fully explain that. But I think we have to start somewhere, and just understanding the workings of the basic system is a good place to begin.
Can I ask a really maybe dumb question, maybe not? Mm-hmm. Do we know that consciousness exists in the brain?
I would venture to say yes.
Let me just follow up. Because I know that when you take out like half your brain, you mm-hmm. can still function, right? You can take out, you know, the left hemisphere, and the right hemisphere will rewire. Mm-hmm. But then if you were to cut that in half again, and you only get a quarter of your brain, right. Would you still have consciousness? I mean, at what point does your consciousness disappear?
Yeah, Heather, how many subjects have you done this experiment right. on?
So we do that every day in the lab.
But seriously, what is the N on this?
Yes. When does it move to your feet?
I mean, it's a philosophical question. People say, take little bits of the brain away. How much do you take away? How much of the brain do you actually need for conscious awareness? And some people claim that you only need the brainstem. Well, we know that that's not true, because if you take a full adult and you take away their cortex, or they have a damage to the cortex, they're not going to be conscious anymore. However, there are children who were born without a cortex, and they just have their brainstem, and they have some semblance of what we might call consciousness.
Are these what we call children of the damned?
You can't joke about anencephaly. Exactly. You can't joke about anencephaly.
I didn't know there was a name for it.
But seriously, I'll have conversations with dogs. I can see dogs are dreaming. Mm-hmm. Dogs experience the joy of discovery.
Mm-hmm.
But is a dog paralyzed by self-doubt? Actually, I think I've even seen that. No, a dog with an especially aggressively disciplining owner seemed to be paralyzed, like, mm-hmm. I can't cross this line or the guy's going to hit me. Mm-hmm. And so how far back do we go from, what is it, the rhesus? What's the guy?
Rhesus monkey.
But they have begins with a K? The just monkeys?
More information.
In Amy Farrah-Fowler's lab?
Capuchin.
Capuchin.
Oh, Capuchin? It's Kardashian. A C, not a K.
Kardashian.
How far down do we go? Then there's a cat. Then right. I've spoken, albeit briefly, with birds.
Okay.
And it's a different deal, right?
Bill, you're Dr. Doolittle, as well as the science guy. Okay.
Once we have a measure of consciousness, then we're able to say, does this animal have it? Does a baby have it? You know, when is it emergent? But until we have an understanding of what it is, so there's certain theories of consciousness. One is when you have a system that has a certain amount of integrated, differentiated information, that it will fundamentally have consciousness. That could be a computer. It could be any kind of system, a nervous system. So once we have an understanding of a theory of consciousness, then we can measure it and see what has it.
Well, and I think it's important to think about, if you take out, quote, half the brain, you're essentially dealing with duplicated structures existing, correct? So there's going to be some asymmetry between left and right, but you're dealing with half of a brain that then is pretty much duplicating all the structures you've removed. Once you start chopping up that half, there's really no more duplicated structures you can start taking. So if there's one amygdala left, you can't take away that amygdala. There's nothing to take that place. So if you want to start chopping up cortex, or if, you know, if there's an accident that compromises part of cortex, you have other parts of cortex that are similarly structured that can theoretically take over some of that function. Once you start getting into those limbic structures and the sublimbic structure, all that stuff, there's no more duplication. So you can't keep like hacking it in half. It's not like a, you know, calculus limit. Like, how much can I leave and still have the person be conscious? But,
you understood what
yes,
I said.
I understood.
I was thinking, you can have a person with a brain the size of a penny, it's too little.
But you know what's really interesting?
You were saying chopping up, and I was sitting here just actually thinking of your vegan cookbook.
is that you can take away the amygdala, which you can take
but
away
what about the hypothalamus?
You can even take away the hypothalamus.
Wait, Heather, you said that way too glibly.
Okay. Well, there are certain people who they have a disease actually that calcifies their amygdala, so they become damaged and they no longer work. So you cannot have emotion, you can still be conscious. You cannot have memory and you can still be conscious. There's a case in England where he only remembers things for like 30 seconds. So each 30 seconds he writes down, I'm just now conscious for the very first time, and then I'm just now conscious for the very first time, but he's still having awareness. So the question is, you can take away all these things, but how much of the brain is necessary to have subjective experience?
Yeah, actually, that is a great question.
How does he remember how to write?
Has he seen Memento?
This is very interesting.
This is a great question.
He's seen it 3,000 times.
But every single time, it's like the first time.
So there's something called procedural memory, which is different than declarative memory. Procedural
it's like riding
memory,
a bicycle.
Exactly. So when you learn something like motoric, like riding a bike or tying a shoe. So what's interesting about this case in England is that he was a pianist. Once he got started playing, he could play the entire piece of music all the way through. As soon as he came out of it, he didn't know where he was, what he was doing, whatever. But it's a procedural memory is with a different part of the brain called the basal ganglia, which you can engage in even if you don't have declarative memories, semantic memories, memories about things or facts.
So it looks like all of your research is happening on people who have brain disorders.
Some of the best ways to learn about the brain is by seeing what happens in the natural world when it doesn't work. Because of all sorts of legal and ethical issues, we can't do that. So
we
take what nature gives us, but that's one of the things that, you know, every brain lesion is different, every accident is different. There's a tremendous amount of unpredictability when you're dealing with any of these sorts of syndromes.
So you use the brain mapping to... Is that the way to go to cure these horrific brain diseases like Alzheimer's and Parkinson's?
Just sleep more. I can cure that.
I have a question. I had my brain scanned a couple times on camera for a hilarious science comedy. So it looked to me like if you could get another order of magnitude, that is to say, what is the current resolution of a magnetic resonance image? It looks like it's half a millimeter.
Yep, or voxel.
Something like that.
Yeah,
you have... It looked to me like if you could get another, instead of half a millimeter, 50 microns, then you'd really be able to figure out what was going on.
Well, this is where we're at.
Is that too reductionist to your point?
No, I like reductionism. I just was wondering if that was the pathway to
this is, so where
answers.
We're at is that...
I converted to reductionism when I got married.
Your wife
happy
made
wife,
you.
Happy wife, happy life.
Reductionism.
The state of affairs now is that we have this technology to be able to look at the microstructure of the brain, so we can go in and measure the activation of one or two individual neurons in a monkey or even in a human during surgery, and we can look at this very microstructure, and then we look at the macrostructure or the activation in things like fMRI, which is like a
functional magnetic resonance
imaging, which is sort of looking from very far away. But we need something in between, like a meso level, to understand how all these circuits are wired up, because just looking at where the blood flows at a certain area, that's what fMRI is looking at, is to...
Coarse.
Exactly. And the other way is too fine. So we need something in between. And there are certain technologies that are being developed now, things like optogenetics, where you can actually look at the neurocircuitry and control.
So optogenetic, I did a little reading on that. And so you've got photoreceptive organisms you put in the brain or proteins.
Yeah.
And then you follow the light that they emit. Is that how that works?
It's sort of like that.
Is this from Wrath of Khan?
Oh, God.
That was really worth it.
That was deep. That was
our carrying geeks up here on the stage. These are ways to poke and prod a living person's brain without doing damage.
You basically take these photosensitive algae, you take the gene that codes for that, you insert it in a virus, which then inserts that into the...
You get a photoreceptive virus that you stick in someone's brain.
Well,
did I just hear that?
You take the gene of the photoreceptive algae, and then you want to transport it into the brain, so you do it via a virus. That's not dangerous.
So you're letting your virus do your bidding in someone's brain.
Yeah, and so then what happens...
It's like you put the thing in his ear, and it goes into... I remember, we all saw it.
That was creepy.
But it's a virus... It's algae that you attach to a virus?
Yes, Eugene.
Heather, I got this now.
Viral algae, Eugene. Everybody knows this.
Look, let me see if I got this right. The algae has photoreceptive proteins.
Yes.
There's no good way to get that protein into another living body unless you attach it to a virus where that's what they do.
Well, they're going to start replicate. They're going to start transcribing, correct?
Yeah, and then what happens is that now wherever you insert this gene, now you've inserted a receptor that's going to be sensitive to light. So now when you shine light on it, the neuron will fire. And so what they've shown, let's say in mice, for example, is that you can shine a certain, like a blue light and cause a whole circuit because it's being activated.
Dr. Berlin.
Yes.
Is it that you shine a light and it causes the neuron to fire, or when the neuron fires, it lights up?
No. Okay. You're shining. I see where you're going. Well, you know, when you shine the light, the receptors that are sensitive to light open, which then cause the neuron to fire. Because then there's a whole rush of, you know, a whole chemical process.
The virus is introducing a sensitivity.
Which is detectable, right? The purpose of that is to make it detectable.
That's the whole point.
This is Schrodinger's viral algae, right?
Do you want to set up your child for success? Of course you do. Maybe you want to save money on private tutoring, or maybe it's just out of your budget altogether. Is this a big school year for your child? Like maybe they're starting kindergarten, middle school, or high school, or some other milestone. Maybe your family moved and they're starting at a new school. Is your child ahead? Not getting challenged enough in class? Well, we love that little smarty, but we want them to be engaged. IXL Learning is an online learning program for kids covering math, language arts, science, and social studies. IXL is designed to help them really understand and master topics in a fun way. Powered by advanced algorithms, IXL gives the right help to each kid, no matter the age or the personality. There's one site for all the kids in your home, pre-K to 12th grade. Kids can use it at home on the computer or on the go through the app on your phone or your tablet. No more grading those worksheets. IXL grades everything itself. And no more trying to figure out how to explain math equations or grammar rules yourself. IXL has built-in explanation videos. 1 in 4 students in the U.S. are learning with IXL. IXL is used in 95 of the top 100 school districts in the U.S. Make an impact on your child's learning. Get IXL now. And Star Talk Radio listeners can get an exclusive 20% off IXL membership when they sign up today at IXL.com/StarTalk. Visit IXL.com/StarTalk to get the most effective learning program out there at the best price.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
Save big money on everything for your projects. Now at Menards. We have it all for garden and landscaping essentials. Visit our outdoor garden center today and update your backyard space. Grid accents lattice panels have a timeless design with an innovative design that's simple to install and requires almost no maintenance. Save big on lattice panel options at Menards. View our entire selection of garden center products today on Menards.com.
Save big money at Menards.
There are two sides to this. You want to repair people who have real neurological disorders, Parkinson's, but maybe you want to make people smarter or more, like you said, superhuman.
I'd love to throw a car. What do I need to do?
Yeah, yeah.
How much algae do I eat?
Are you or your people, are they involved in this work, trying to enhance human intellectual performance?
So there's something called neuroprosthetics. We're using some of it right now to treat psychiatric illness where we implant electrodes. It's called deep brain stimulation to help treat psychiatric patients. But you can implant electrodes to help people, for example, who are deaf, to to hear or to help blind people see. And that technology is in pilot studies now.
There's a whole field of neuroengineering.
Exactly.
That is combining.
Yeah. And eventually, yes, we can do things like enhance memory, enhance attention by using these neuroprosthetics.
Is this like drinking Red Bull?
Similar.
Okay, so our brain, as far as I can tell, is chemistry and electricity. You're manipulating either the chemistry of the brain or the electrical circuitry of the brain mm-hmm. with magnetic fields or whatever else. If that's the case, I know my computer uses electrical circuits. So is there a future where we're going to attach your brain to a computer?
Yeah, I don't see why not. I mean, we already do. Yeah.
I have an old question about magnetism and brains. There are animals, apparently, that find direction on their own using some sort of ferrous, some iron-bearing thing in their cells, in their brains. But we never got that.
Bill, you're trying to find true north?
The fact that MRI machines work indicates that there are magnetic properties. I mean, there's all sorts of properties to all of our bodies. So there's smaller, lesser magnetic qualities to our body. But no, we cannot navigate by them.
Maybe you can't.
He doesn't ask directions.
No, but Bill, other animals got all kinds of stuff we don't have.
Right.
Newts can regenerate limbs. We can't. Eagles can fly. We can't. I mean, you just go on down the list.
Will it get to that thing where our brains really will be like a computer? We can hook it up to a computer and be able to speak languages without actually learning them. We will be able to download information.
Ask Mayim, apparently she can.
No, the answer's no.
Wait, I think the answer is probably yes, though, right? Eventually. Well, I mean, there's computers that can translate it, like Google.
Learning a language is a very, very complicated. I mean, just to use that as an example, we're not translation machines. So in theory, I could picture a world where if I had a catalog dictionary, I could be hooked up to something that would allow me to be a translation machine. But the subtleties of language and interaction and the way we communicate and answer questions and have experiences through language, it's beyond complicated that you could plug into a computer.
But you could at least maybe read a menu in another country.
Sure, I will grant you that, yes.
So I know what the hell I'm getting when I'm in Paris.
I will grant you that. That's possible.
Wait, besides eggs. And champignon, which is everywhere as a mushroom.
So you wouldn't understand another language, but you could technically translate it hooked up to it.
I'm guessing about the future.
I'm going to believe anything you say.
No.
When you chew on those pink pills and it shows you where you haven't brushed, how does that work?
I'm going to actually rebut Mayim here.
Yeah. Okay.
Who would have thought some years ago that a computer would ever beat a human in chess? Who would have thought that a computer would ever beat a human in Jeopardy? So computers are moving pretty fast here. So why wouldn't the context of language be just another thing it learns rather than just a translated dictionary? Why should we put limits on the computers that have transcended limits we've ever given for them in the past?
If you want to look at it that way, they're already smarter than us. They can do math quicker than us. They can do calculations. They can translate into languages. They're much better in terms of holding a lot of information. And then why would we even want to incorporate that into our brain? Right now, we have our iPhones. We don't have to remember numbers anymore. Our computers do that for us. So then one of the questions is, what are humans still good for?
Yeah, in fact, the idea that you'd plug chips in your head to know things, this is not a chip in my head, but it's an arm's reach.
And it eventually it will be. It'll get smaller and smaller and smaller. You can implant the iPhone in your brain, and you can talk to it, and it'll give you information. So
people already talk to their iPhones.
Right, yeah, they do.
I got to step in as an engineer here. I want to remind you that computers don't just come out of the sky. Somebody designs these things.
Right.
Shock the guys over here.
I'll believe it when I see it.
But then as far as communication in other language, I can easily envision, I guess a pun intended, a computer that can recognize faces and emotions on faces, and then that would enhance the translation of a language. Seriously, I don't think that's an extraordinary step.
But there's that famous impossible sentence for computers where you say, time flies like an arrow, fruit flies like a banana.
Why is that impossible for a computer?
Because the two sentences, they're grammatically identical, yet they have completely different meanings.
Why couldn't a computer learn it the way you did?
Right.
Yeah, Chomsky.
Time Ming of the words changed how they were perceived?
Yeah, yeah. So what we don't know is whether the computer then has to have a human life experience.
Consciousness,
right,
some
that I was going to say. The real thing is, will it eventually have consciousness or experience or subjective states? What is it like to be
can
a computer?
Can it ever have awareness?
Well, now yeah, we get to the Turing test, everybody.
Oh, very good.
I said the Turing test, guys, yeah. Just because I could.
That was pretty impressive.
You've been listening to StarTalk Live at the Brooklyn Academy of Music, recorded on February 24th, 2014, with Eugene Merman, Michael Ian Black, Heather Berlin, Paul Rudd, Mayim Bialik, and my good friend, Bill Nye the Science Guy. I'm your host, Neil deGrasse Tyson. We'll have more of the show next week. Until then, keep looking up.
This is a big year. The Ohio Lottery's golden anniversary. 50 years of excitement, of growing jackpots and crossed fingers. 50 years of funding for schools, of changed lives and brightened days. 50 years of fun, and that is worth celebrating. So watch for can't-miss promotions, huge events, and new games that will make the Ohio Lottery's 50th year its biggest one yet. Learn more at funturns50.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.